All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rinkwide Vancouver. The Vancouver Canucks get a single point, and all points are good points at this late stage of the season, but let's not sugarcoat this at all. They're going to be kicking themselves for letting a 3-0 lead get away in a 4-3 overtime loss to the Colorado Avalanche. Lots to talk about on this episode of Rinkwide Vancouver. We're coming to you from the Rinkwide studio in the lower lobby of the Wall Center Hotel. If you're thinking about wedding space, the Wall Center can meet your every need, from small family gatherings to big, bold weddings and receptions. Consider the Wall Center. If you're looking for wedding and reception space, email them, sales@wallcenter.com. Jeff Patterson joined on this episode by Harmon Dial of The Athletic and Canucks Conversation. And Harm, oh boy, we've got lots to get into.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You're trying to prepare for the pod throughout the entire game. You're taking notes. And after the first period, I'm like, wow, so many different positive storylines. There might not be enough positive things to say about this performance. What a textbook job they've done. And then the collapse. I mean, I don't know. At this point, I'm wondering if I'm a bad luck charm. I swear, I think, you know, like last time I did it was almost, what was it, 5-1 loss to LA. And then they went on a roll pretty soon after. And now I'm back and they drop another one. But just felt like they lost their composure in the third period. And all the positive things that they were doing in terms of transitioning the puck quickly, making clean plays, not making mistakes, it all started to unravel.
It's the start of the Casey DeSmith era, if you will, as the starter. It won't be a long era, but first time as the de facto starter in the absence of Thatcher Demko, certainly a talking point we'll get to. There were so many turning points in this hockey game as well, and as you point out, I mean, they couldn't have drawn up a better start. 24 seconds in, JT Miller, his 33rd of the season, and they wasted an Ilya Mikheyev goal. Harm, his 11th of the season, his first in 35 games. They had the 2-0 lead 2 minutes and 44 seconds into the hockey game, and it looked like a complete repeat of Saturday night against Winnipeg. And then they added to it. Nikita Zadorov got it to 3-0. It shouldn't have taken a fourth goal for the Vancouver Canucks, but they had some opportunities, I think, of Elias Lindholm when Georgiev came out of his net there late in the second period, and Lindholm looked like he was going to be able to slide a puck home. Didn't happen. When we talk about those turning points, the Mikko Rantanen goal with under 2 seconds to play. The Canucks get out of the second period up 3-0. Maybe the Avs go quietly into the night, but that goal deflated the Canucks, took a little bit of air out of the building, and obviously gave the Avalanche a little bit of life and some reason to believe. And then penalty problems. You talk about composure. How many times recently have we heard Rick Tocchet praising his team for staying out of the penalty box? Unfortunately for the Canucks, they take four penalties, a couple of overlapping, and right back to these turning points that we talked about with Elias Pettersson off. And he doesn't take many penalties, just his fifth minor penalty of the season. But Ian Cole does get his stick into the hands of Nathan MacKinnon, but you're already down a man, and MacKinnon sells it. The referees buy it, and seems to me it wasn't that long ago that the Canucks ran into five-on-three problems in the third period in Minnesota with Casey DeSmith in goal as well, and this Avalanche power play that's been red hot of late and has so much firepower on it. That gets them back within one with basically the third period to play, and then the video review of the Ross Colton goal. And Carson Soucy, who has just been so solid and steady in his return to the lineup, puck up over the glass, and it kind of felt inevitable at that point. So I'm with you. I wanted to believe that the Vancouver Canucks sort of had passed enough tests and leapt over enough hurdles this season that this kind of thing was behind them. Now, full credit to the Colorado Avalanche, again, a team that boasts the highest score in the National Hockey League, and his fingerprints were all over the comeback here, but a 3-0 lead at home, playing the way that they have played and talking about tightening up in front of Casey DeSmith. Like, this is a massive, massive disappointment.
And I feel bad for Casey DeSmith, to be totally honest with you. I thought that the Canucks, through the first two periods, defended pretty well. But even like against a team like the Avs that have that high-octane offense, they're going to create it anyway. And they had some really high quality looks. And I think back to some of the saves, like in the first period, to Smith stopping Trennan. He had a couple of terrific stops against the middle stat line. At the start of the second period, Quinn Hughes turned it over uncharacteristically, and DeSmith was sort of there to bail him out. A Mikko Rantanen rush chance in the second period, that shot took DeSmith's stick kind of flying out of his grip there as well. And then even when you look at the goals that he sort of surrendered, they were either goals that he really had no chance on. Like when you think about the Ross Colton one or the backdoor tap in, or there were bounces involved, like the 3-1 goal towards the end of the second period as well. It also included a weird rim around the boards that took a funny hop. And then even the OT winner, right? It sort of pinballed off Juleson. Then it appeared off Nichushkin's face. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, and even in that Minnesota game, when he gives up 8 and they give up 10, and I know Kevin Woodley has talked about this at length, that like of the goals that he gave up, and it's crazy to say when a goalie's beaten for 8 in a hockey game, but there was really only one that was registered as even a middle danger to low danger chance. And again, you give Colorado 5-on-3 opportunity when they're starting to smell some blood there. MacKinnon, I mean, the guy's incredible. There's a reason he's leading the National Hockey League in scoring. You know, in his spot there, it used to be the Ovi spot, maybe it's now the MacKinnon spot, but put it in his wheelhouse, and he's not going to miss from there. Even before they got to work on that power play, like they were pressuring on the delayed penalty, and I kind of thought the Canucks were a little fortunate that they were even able to get a whistle there, because I thought maybe Colorado would score while the ref's arm was still in the air. Didn't happen, but yeah, they convert on the power play, and then the Ross Colton goal, to me, that was sort of an indication of composure. I thought that was one of the shifts in the third period where the Canucks were really running around in their own zone, and ultimately the puck makes its way to the front of the net. Colton with the backhand just kind of shovels it to the net, and real time, you couldn't quite tell whether that puck had squirted across the line and rolled up the equipment of Casey DeSmith, but the replay left no doubt. So the short video review there, and then, you know, it's a 3-all game with 11 minutes to play, and I'm thinking to myself, like, the Canucks have to get something out of this game. Like, they can't flush it entirely. And so they did, including the 10 seconds of penalty kill after Soucy's puck over the glass penalty with 10 seconds to go. So they get to overtime. They get a single point. They're 4-0-1 in their last five games. They're 42-17-8 on the season now, so 92 points. And as I said right at the top, like every point is important. The Oilers got 2 in a big win over Washington, and Washington will be in here on Saturday. So the Oilers gain a single point on the Vancouver Canucks, but it was important ultimately, as crazy as it sounds, to, you know, with a 3-0 lead and in full control and playing beautifully for much of the first two periods, it was important that they got this game to overtime to at least get a single point out of the night.
Yeah, and I mean, the NHL at this point, can't remember who said it first, but it really is a points accumulation system over the regular season more than it is about wins and losses. Even the games where you are losing, you kind of have to find a way to get a point. And really for that, they can credit JT Miller. I mean, what he did to set the tempo in this first period, and not just in this game, but how consistently he's done it specifically against top opponents. Like, you go down through the history of his performances against top teams throughout the season, and he's had some monster nights. I mean, he opened the scoring against the Jets early on Saturday night. He had the OT winner against the Kings. We all remember the Saturday night game against Boston, where he had three assists, had like eight hits, a lead in the faceoff circle, dominated in terms of two-way metrics. You think back to some of those October games early in the season, like that four-point night in the season opener, shutting down McDavid, having McDavid in a rage quit type moment, if you'll remember, in some of those games as well. The three-point night, including the OT winner during Bo Horvat's return to Rogers Arena. I mean, the goal and assist against Toronto in January. I mean, you could just go on and on and on. This guy shows up for big games, and it's a shame that they kind of wasted that performance. That's the other guy I sort of feel bad for, because the key to right now why JT's been so successful is he continues moving his feet. He's not stationary in any one spot. And what I mean by that is, on his opening goal, for example, he starts the play by cycling the puck down low. And instead of puck watching, he immediately is in attack mode, trying to get to the middle of the ice. And then, of course, gets the deflection and, of course, does the heavy lifting to set up Mikheyev on that goal. They can thank JT Miller for getting a point out of this one.
It's funny. I joked, because you don't see it very often, but he got thrown out of the faceoff circle on the opening faceoff of the hockey game. I said, like, it was rage from JT Miller. 24 seconds later, he opens the scoring with his 33rd, but a deft deflection in front of the net. But I did love the play. And look, I've been wondering, I think a lot of people have been wondering, when would Ilya Mikheyev score and what would it look like? And that was a pretty play, a center drive by Mikheyev into space, and Miller into the zone, around behind the net, held on, great vision, and then put that puck right on the tape. And Mikheyev, who has missed lots of opportunities like that one, makes no mistake, and good for him. And you could see the smile on his face, obviously some relief as well. You know, he'd been playing well of late, and he has to continue it. And I don't think that one goal is likely to open the floodgates for him, but certainly it's going to take a weight off his shoulder. And again, for the first 40 minutes, you know, in the matchup role, like, both of those goals came against the Nathan MacKinnon line. There was a shift later in the first period where Mikheyev basically spent 30 seconds along the boards battling with Nathan MacKinnon. That's a win. 30 seconds where Nathan MacKinnon can't get the puck and get into open space and get to the attack. Like, that's a good shift. And so I thought again that Ilya Mikheyev did some good things. And really, through 40 minutes of play, I'm thinking to myself, like, man, and maybe I shouldn't have thought this, but like, MacKinnon's been pretty quiet. I know it's back to back. They had played in Calgary the night before, but, you know, Cale Makar really hadn't done an awful lot in this hockey game. But Mikko Rantanen is sort of the quiet superstar, and his 34th, that starts their comeback. And again, the Canucks just had to get out of the period. Lindholm and Juleson, like, they looked like they had pretty good position on him. And somebody's got to either take the stick or deflect that puck away. Whatever the case, you just can't let Mikko Rantanen tap that puck in, but he did. And at 3-1, it was a slightly different game, obviously, and then things turned. And, you know, look at the third period shots on goal, 17-3. And I know it was aided by a couple of power plays, including the 5-on-3, but 17-3 tells the story. And then just one shot in overtime, and that was the winner off the face of Val Nichushkin, his 25th of the year, from MacKinnon and Makar, just 28 seconds into OT. So final shots on the night were 34-21. And Harm, as we praise JT Miller and his line, we have to question a night like this one, where the Avs stars ultimately show up and win the hockey game, and Elias Pettersson had a dreadful night. Like, forget the penalty. I mean, he doesn't take many, so I'm not going to hold that against him. But he matched up against Casey Mittelstadt and his line for the most part in this hockey game. Mittelstadt was his most common opponent at 5-on-5. The shot attempts were 11-0 for the Avalanche, with EP40 going against Casey Mittelstadt. Shot attempts were 13-0 against Yakov Trenin, 13-0 against Josh Manson, 12-0 against Sam Girard. Like, MacKinnon and his line saw JT Miller all night long. JT Miller does the heavy lifting there. The hope is that Elias Pettersson, against softer matchups, can take over and do something. And to get pinned the way that he did. Like, a disappointing night for the Vancouver Canucks, but individually, that's a tough look on EP40.
Yeah, it seemed like he was really fighting the puck. There was a play in the third period, for example, where in the last 10 minutes, he had a chance, finally had some time and space to carry it through the neutral zone on an entry, and just struggled pulling the trigger, couldn't even get a shot off. And it just felt like one of those nights where he couldn't settle pucks. Pucks were kind of rolling all over. He wasn't able to connect on his passes. And you're right. Look, at the end of the day, Nathan MacKinnon at 5-on-5 was -1. That's huge. You win that even strength matchup against the MacKinnon line, and you're betting that, especially with an Avs team that has to rely on, and I know he had a good night, but Brandon Duhaime was a fourth liner in Minnesota, and they had to rely on him in that second line role with Mittelstadt because they're missing Arturi Lehkonen, because they're missing Zach Parise, because they're obviously also missing Gabriel Landeskog.
And Jonathan Drouin didn't play. He was a late scratch with an illness as well. So
yeah, so that's a middle six group in Colorado that, and Logan O'Connor in terms of, like, you're looking at a third line guy. So Colorado's middle six, even with Mittelstadt as an important deadline acquisition, is battered, and you're essentially able to negate MacKinnon at 5-on-5. It has to be further down the lineup where you exploit Colorado, especially because you have last change at home. And when we sort of discuss, you know, the players that maybe what you would have wanted to see more from, I'll also include Quinn Hughes in that conversation to a lesser extent. I don't think he was nearly as struggling nearly as much as Pettersson, but for instance, he sort of botched the pass to Pettersson that then forced Pettersson to take the penalty that then obviously led to the 5-on-3 that the Avs scored on and really started to change the momentum in that game. He had a couple of giveaways, and overall it was pretty quiet. And that's another thing to keep in mind is it wasn't just the Miller line sort of getting the MacKinnon matchup. For most of the night, it was Carson Soucy and Ian Cole facing that big Colorado line. So you'd have thought, okay, Quinn Hughes and Philip Pronik would have been nice to, against Colorado's second and third line, see them create some offense and take advantage of softer matchups. And I think that really is an important takeaway from that game, is they just weren't able to exploit the Avs in non-Nathan MacKinnon minutes.
Colorado played in Calgary on Tuesday night, came to Vancouver for this Wednesday game. So back-to-back for the Avs. So much made about the Canucks with their two full days off, 3 days between games. You would have thought the third period is where that would have benefited the Vancouver Canucks, and yet we said the shots on goal were 17-3. You know, I look under the hood at the underlying numbers on the night, and the Avs controlled 70% of the shot attempts at 5-on-5. The scoring chances were 26-17 in Colorado's favor. The high dangers, 15-7. The Canucks didn't have a high danger in the third period. Obviously, didn't have one in overtime, and none of overtime was played at 5-on-5 anyhow. But what a tale of really two periods and then the balance of the hockey game. But it is unfortunate because I think Rick Tocchet did the right thing with, you know, rewarding his players with 2 days off, coming off that Winnipeg win. And you really thought that we've spent so much time talking about, you know, the schedule working in the Canucks' favor here in the month of March with this 9-game homestand. Now, they've picked up 3 of 4 points, so I don't want to go overboard. But when you have a 3-0 lead at home and you have designs on going deep into the playoffs, like, you know, I think this one is going to stick in the back of the Canucks' mind. And if they run into the Avs and they find themselves in a lead at some point in the playoffs, I would imagine that Rick Tocchet would be a little concerned that, you know, other teams will sort of point to this too once you get to the playoffs and, you know, lean on the Canucks in the third period, see how they handle the pressure, because this group tonight didn't do a very good job of handling the pressure.
Yeah, it felt like they were overthinking with the puck. It felt like they were almost afraid to make a mistake by the time that Colorado made it 3-2. You could really sense that, like in the first period, why the Canucks were so successful territorially and not giving Colorado a lot. A big part of it was because they were transitioning the puck so cleanly and playing off instincts and let's get the forecheck established and let's just win battles and play our game. Whereas in the third period, I think it started to get in their head a little bit. Obviously, the first game-changing moment was that 3-1 goal at the end of the second period. But after that, as things started to go against them, it really did feel like it was getting in their heads, forcing them to make mistakes, and they started to shoot themselves in the foot. There were a lot of situations, and this isn't even just referring to the goals against, but other shifts where the Canucks would have a chance to clear, for whatever reason, couldn't get the puck out. I don't think it's that the Canucks all of a sudden forgot how to clear pucks out of the zone. I think it just sort of got in their heads a little bit.
So, you know, a central theme here on this episode is all of these turning points. And we've addressed the 3-1 goal, the Ian Cole penalty that puts them two men down, Susie's penalty, obviously, that hurts them in overtime. But let's back it up to the first period, because I think this was a turning point as well. Everything going the Canucks' way. And Josh Manson drills JT Miller from behind. It's not called boarding. It's called a check to the head. There are mechanisms in place for the officials to call it a major penalty and then review it. And I thought that was a perfect case because Miller is tied up with Sam Girard. He's helpless. And Manson has no other intent. Like, he's already been jawing with Miller. Miller's had this incredible start to the hockey game. Manson's frustrated. I know that, you know, Manson plays with an edge. I get that. And obviously, you got into the scrap, if we call it that, with Zadorov later. And I think it was a result of the hit on JT Miller. But, you know, a 5-minute power play there, like, who knows, right? Nobody, we can't go back in time. Who knows how it might have played out. But honestly, I think Josh Manson was fortunate to get just 2 minutes. And, you know, the Canucks weren't able to do anything on the power play. And that was a theme through the night. Lafferty drew the Miles Wood penalty in the second period where the Canucks could have extended their lead. They couldn't do it there. They did get a power play in the third. Nils Höglander on the doorstep at 3-3. So we talk about add the Höglander chance to all these turning points. But what did you see in the Manson hit on Miller?
I think it was straight targeting the head as the principal point of contact. I mean, there are situations where there will be hits penalized that get 5-minute majors where the head is an incidental point of contact. So if this is a player straight targeting the head against a player that was completely vulnerable, absolutely, I think that should have been a 5-minute major. And the other part of it too is because Miller got pulled from the game, presumably by concussion spotters, they didn't even have him for the power play. So
you're taking
away, like, how much was Manson really punished in that situation? I don't think it was enough. And I do wonder if the league will even consider fining him at all, because really a 2-minute penalty, I don't think that was enough for that hit.
Yeah, and you're right. And then, like, there was a little bit of concern as the Canucks came out of the locker room after the first period, come back to the ice for the start of the second. JT Miller, 17 skaters came out, and I know myself and others along Press Row, and we all tweeted, like, no JT Miller. And then JT Miller made a late dramatic return. So that was good for him and for the hockey club, because I was worried that maybe doctors had seen him in the intermission or whatever, and then he was gone from the hockey game. So a little bit of concern there. Yeah, I mean, again, we talk about this, and it's easy in a 4-3 loss, and maybe it sounds like sour grapes and all that kind of stuff, but Department of Player Safety, like, I don't think JT Miller's safety is taken into consideration there. He was completely helpless. He gets drilled by a guy who was frustrated because things weren't going his way and the team's way. And I mean, I'm just glad for JT with the season that he's having and the night that he was having as well, that he was able to return to this hockey game.
The other thing that I just wanted to add, and Ian McIntyre sort of brought this up on the broadcast, was how different would the refs have looked at that situation if Miller, who's an honest player, had just laid on the ice and it had looked like a potential serious injury? Because we've had situations where, I mean, you look at Nathan MacKinnon sort of embellishing that cold call. We obviously saw in the Winnipeg game how many calls they sort of, you know, head snapping, and the refs see that and they think it's a penalty. I do agree with Ian that it's probably a different situation if Miller is actually hurt, or if he's laying out and it looks serious, that they would have called it a 5-minute and then gone in and reviewed it. And that's one of the other things, is you have an honest player in Miller who does not believe in diving, does not believe in embellishment, any of that stuff. I bet you hates all of that. So he's an honest player. He's going to get up right away. I do wonder if that creeps into the ref's minds that, oh, he's back up right away. Does that make it less severe of a hit?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people pointing to the officials on this one. Just one other thing here about the officials. Kyle Raymond was one of the referees. The other was Mitch Dunning. But a moment that I haven't seen, like, we've caught referees on hot mics before, but I've never heard an NHL referee talk to a player, especially a captain, like he was a 4-year-old. But the mics at Rogers Arena caught it when Quinn Hughes was called for interference. And Kyle Raymond, who's a veteran referee, I remember when he was working in the Western Hockey League back when I was calling games in Kamloops. Like, this guy's been at this a long, long time. Like, we talk about respect in a two-way street, and to hear a referee say, Quinn, go to the box. Sit in the box. And he said, he didn't say please. So there, he was polite about it, but it was just like, it just seemed like a really strange dialogue to hear from a referee basically telling, you know, time out for you. You go sit in the corner and think about what you've just done here.
Yeah, I agree. And you couldn't have said it any better in terms of it was like a dad telling the little kid to go in his room and
totally,
you're in timeout and I don't want to hear a peep from you. And yeah, it was hilarious. It's unfortunate that the Canucks lost. Otherwise, I bet there'd be a lot more memes and right. We'd be able to laugh a lot more about that, because what an underrated moment from that game.
No laughing about this one tonight as the Canucks flush a 3-0 lead. They lose 4-3 in overtime. They get the single point. They're up to 92 points on the season as they work their way closer to that 100-point mark and beyond. So a little bit of a speed wobble. Two games down, 7 to go on this homestand. Washington coming to town on Saturday. Jeff and Harm with you as we continue to break this down. Lots ahead. We're going to get player and coach reaction. We'll have our rink-wide Vancouver 3-star selection, a staff that stands out, a little bit of listener feedback, and we'll preview what's to come on Saturday and beyond. 4-3, the Avs come all the way back to defeat the Vancouver Canucks in overtime. You're listening to Rink-wide Vancouver. The Avs defeat the Vancouver Canucks in overtime. So the Canucks do get a single point. They're 4-0-1 in their last five. But this one's going to sting, I would imagine. You've heard from us, Jeff and Harm here with you. Harm, we're going to play the head coach, a couple of clips from Rick Tocchet, and then you're going to hear from JT Miller as well. And I'll get to react to that. But this was Rick Tocchet postgame on what went wrong and where this game got away from the Vancouver Canucks.
Obviously, that goal, I didn't think, you know, I think 3-1 was kind of a head scratcher, but I think they started to go. McKinnon and them started to fly, and we just couldn't get anybody to grab hold of a puck, whether it's on a forecheck or a breakout, just to kind of slow things down. We were a little hot potato, and we were kind of soft on the puck. Mostly the third, I guess. So we, you know, it's a, hate to say it, but learning lesson. You know, we need some guys to dig in on certain situations. We couldn't get everybody to grab a puck for us and hold it.
So you can sense the frustration there, the head coach. Again, I think he thought that his team was sort of beyond this, that with a 3-0 lead late into the second period would have had that intestinal fortitude and the wherewithal to grind this thing out and get a result. They get a single point, but they give up two, and the Avs probably thinking that it wasn't their night, and then in fact it turned into their night, and a huge part of that, and we'll get to the rink-wide Vancouver 3-stars, and you'll hear some star power names, certainly Rick Tocchet pointing to the fact that the Avs' best players basically took this game over.
I mean, we need people to grab a hold of it. You know, their guys took over. You know, McKinnon said, I'm taking this game. We need a couple of guys to counteract that. And I thought we didn't. You know, Casey DeSmith battled really hard tonight for us. That was a positive.
So a little love for Casey DeSmith there at the end. Coach said he battled, but he needed somebody else outside of JT Miller. Needed some other players to step up and respond and try to match the star power on that Colorado side. We mentioned Miller. We've talked about him, the big night, the goal, the assist. He's up to 33 goals on the season. JT Miller was asked post-game, and you'll hear some frustration in his voice for sure, about the 3-1 goal in the dying seconds of the second period that allowed the Avs back in this hockey game.
Well, I mean, that goal definitely gave him belief. I mean, that's all that team really needed. I mean, it happens though. We should be able to come out in the third and with 2-goal lead at home against one of the best teams in the league. I mean, I don't understand any better reason to get up for that. I mean, it just sucks. This has happened before, and just kind of hope it works out when we have leads instead of take control of the game. And like, we have been good, you know, with the lead, but getting to that point of the year where it's, you know, just hard to swallow, really.
A little bleep in there for JT Miller. This is digital. We probably could have run that, but so be it. But the audio provided had the beep already in it. I think you can understand that stuff happens. It does. It reminded me a little bit of the Toronto game, quite honestly. Remember, they had the 3-0 lead, and then the Leafs evened it at 3, and the Canucks pulled away from Toronto and were able to win that one back in January, but wasn't to be. They fall by a score of 4-3. JT Miller was asked about the check by Josh Manson, said that those two have battled over the years, didn't think it was all that big a deal, was downplaying that part of it. But you can hear the frustration there. And look, we've talked about the 3-1 goal. It was a big moment in this hockey game, without a doubt.
For sure. And yet, I'm also of the mindset that, especially in the playoffs, things are going to go against you. Ray Ferraro also mentioned it on the broadcast that, look, you're never going to control a game for a full 60 minutes. Yes, that's absolutely a turning point. But like JT alluded to as well, you're going into the third period with a 3-1 lead. I mean, ask anybody before the game, would you like a 3-1 lead going into the third period, sure, even though Colorado has some momentum scoring late? You're going to take that 10 times out of 10. And so you need to take that out of your game in terms of allowing a goal that late, especially when they got the initial clear. But even from that point onward, it's like, yes, even though Colorado has some momentum now and they're going to have some life going into the third period, you've got to be able to weather the storm. And I think for most of the season, they actually have been able to weather the storm, at least compared to, you know, last year, for example. As soon as anything would go wrong for them, they would then start shooting themselves in the foot. And this year they've had more of the bend, don't break type mentality. They just need to get back to it as the intensity ramps up the closer we get to the playoffs.
Question for you. What did you make of Nikita Zadorov's night? It was eventful, certainly. The goal, the assist, the brief fight with Manson in response to the hit on JT Miller. But if you look at his underlying numbers, look, numbers hurt sometimes. His individual Corsi was 15%. The shot attempts were 17-3 for the Avs. He and Juulsen were out there for that Ross Colton goal where he talked about the scramble and the Canucks just couldn't touch the puck. And it's just the truth. Noah Juulsen's on the ice for all four goals. Two of them come on the power play, but two of them at even strength as well. So when the other team scores four and you're out there for all of them, that's a tough night at the office. But put Juulsen aside for a sec. What did you make of Zadorov's busy night?
Yeah, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. I mean, of course, you love the goal, you love the assist, you love him standing up for JT Miller, even though he, didn't really get any punches in, and that was hardly a fight. But it is interesting. Like, I looked at the underlying numbers after, and to see them pretty horrific surprised me a little bit, honestly, just because I didn't think he had a particularly bad night moving the puck. Maybe I just missed some things. Maybe.
No, like, I being there at the rink, like, I'm with you. Like, I was shocked when I saw the underlying numbers too, because you're right. Like, I think that's well put, that it didn't feel that way, but at the end of the night, the numbers don't lie, and that's a tough look on him and Juulsen.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. I don't think I had a problem with Zadorov. I do think on a couple of instances, especially on that 3-1 goal, like, Juulsen's got to find a way to tie up the stick, especially when you're a defensive defenseman in that spot. That's sort of the job. And I think for most of the night, the Canucks were doing a pretty good job of, whether it was especially in the first two periods, Carson Soucy or Ian Cole taking away some of those backdoor passes, clogging the lanes in the guts of the ice, as Tocchet would say, and to first, allow that. And then I don't know exactly who was to blame on that Colton rebound goal, but that's another situation where a guy gets a wraparound. Wood did initially. DeSmith makes the desperation save. You'd like to help your goaltender out there and get the puck out once he's bailed you once.
Rick White, Vancouver three-star selection. The three stars in the building selected by the TV broadcast, Mikko Rantanen, JT Miller, Nathan MacKinnon. I'm going to mirror those here on Rink Wide Vancouver. Rantanen with a goal and two assists. He increases his point streak to 11. He's had a pair of double-digit point streaks. Again, on a team that has other stars, he doesn't get talked about, but the dude is a beast. 34th goal of the season was the one that got the comeback started. So a big night for Mikko Rantanen, and he was certainly a factor. 5 shots on goal in this hockey game. Miller, we talked about his big start to this one, and his engine was revving. He was ready for this hockey game. He just needed some support on other lines, and it just didn't happen for the Vancouver Canucks. But another solid night for JT Miller. And how can you look past Nathan MacKinnon? Quiet for two periods, but sometimes all it takes is a period and 28 seconds for him to leave his mark, his 42nd goal of the season, and his slap shot that pinball around and winds up in the back of the net. Nikushin gets credit for the goal, but MacKinnon instrumental there. So a two-point night for the NHL scoring leader, up to 115 points as he pushes for the Hart Trophy. And he's got to be the front runner, you would think. But Rantanen, Miller, MacKinnon, the three stars both in the rink and here on Rinkwide Vancouver.
It just goes to show you with MacKinnon how the Canucks, I thought, pretty expertly played him through the first two periods. Didn't let him wind up and get galloping on his classic rushes through the neutral zone. He wasn't able to pick up a lot of speed in those instances, mostly kept him to the outside. Like, honestly, I was jotting down play after play, especially in that first period where it's like, well done by a defenseman here, gapping up either on McKinnon or his lineman. Excellent job of the forwards reloading to make sure they're all above the puck. So you do all these amazing things in the first two periods, and you're thinking, boy, we're playing Nathan McKinnon to a T, and the guy still ends up somehow winning a game through the power play in this instance. Just such a perfect shot. I mean, that's the mark of a truly transcendent player, is you're able to defend him for most of the game really well, especially at 5-on-5, yet he still ends up with a multi-point night and is able to sort of put the team on his back.
And hey, I'm throwing an honorable mention to Ilya Mikheyev. We've been on his case for so long. First goal in 35 games since December the 17th. Again, it'll be interesting to see what one goal does just to lighten the load there. But hey, he scored, so I'm throwing him a bone with an honorable mention on the Rinkwide Vancouver 3 stars. Lots still ahead here. Along with Harm, this is Jeff. We've got our stat that stands out. We'll hear from you, the listeners, and your thoughts on this one, and a thought or two on Alex Ovechkin making his lone visit of the season. The Washington Capitals are next up. They'll be here on Saturday for the third game of this 9-game homestand. Colorado comes back to defeat the Vancouver Canucks 4-3 in overtime. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Continuing to break down a 4-3 loss in overtime for the Canucks to the Colorado Avalanche. Canucks go 0-2-1 in their 3 games against the big, bad Avs, who are still battling for top spot in the Central Division and, of course, top spot in the Western Conference. Canucks got a little bit of help elsewhere on the out-of-town scoreboard in that battle for top spot in the conference. Winnipeg lost at home to the Nashville Predators. And the way things are shaking down, and I know you and I have talked about this on Canucks Convo as well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, finishing first in the conference looked like it was of paramount importance because you were likely to avoid, you know, a really good team, and you might get Nashville in the first round. I guess be careful what you wish for now. The way that the Predators have gone about their business look unstoppable. I mean, that's an impressive win for them going into Winnipeg and knocking off the Jets 4-2, Edmonton all over the Washington Capitals 7-2, and the early game saw St. Louis. And the Blues keep their hopes alive, although they're chasing Nashville, and Nashville a win, so all they do is keep pace. But St. Louis Blues beat the Los Angeles Kings by a score of 3-1. But that Nashville team is funny. I mean, they got thumped 9-2 by Dallas about 3 weeks ago and looked like they were done, Harm. Toast. And they've had a resurgence. They added at the trade deadline, and all of a sudden, like, I think they could make somebody's life pretty miserable in the first round of the playoffs.
They've been really streaky. I remember when the Canucks played them in Nashville in December. And heading into that game, Nashville had won like 13 of their last 16 games. So they've gone through really high highs and really low lows this season. I think part of that is outside of their top line and some of the veterans that they have in the blue line, that it's a pretty young team. So you're going to ride some of that that youth, some of that inexperience. It's a little bit natural, but you're bang on in terms of finishing first in the Western Conference. It doesn't seem as important as it did beforehand, because it may still result in you playing Vegas in the first round. And I think that matters as we have this conversation of life without Thatcher Demko. Is it's not as devastating a blow, because now even if you do run into a little bit of a slump, you end up playing 500 hockey or something, it's not the end of the world.
Nashville being driven as they have been for a lot of years, but Roman Josi's on fire right now. He's moved into solo third in this behind the Quinn Hughes-Cale Makar derby, up to 65 points, 2 years removed from a 96-point season. So he is one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League, and he's been a huge part of this recent success for the Nashville Predators. And, of course, UC Soros, there was talk about would they trade him. They held on to him. And, again, I think he's the kind of guy that could give teams nightmares come playoff time. But this is a Canucks post-game show, and we won't worry about playoff opponents at this stage other than to make the point that, again, the way Nashville's going, and if Vegas is to, you know, remain in a wild card spot, like, bottom line is you're going to face a good team and a tough opponent in the opening round. And, you know, nights like this one for the Vancouver Canucks, they have to serve as reinforcement of when you get a lead, you know, at all costs, find a way to grind it across the finish line. And they weren't able to do that against the Colorado Avalanche. The stat that stands out for me isn't the 4 straight goals for the Avs or the 2 power play goals. 17-3 in the third period. I think that tells the story of this hockey game. And the Canucks were out shooting the Avs 18-16 through 40 minutes of play. Colorado only had 16 shots in the first two periods. They had 17 in the third alone, and their stars got revved up, and that's always dangerous. And MacKinnon obviously leaves his fingerprints on this hockey game with a couple of points. We'll rant, and we've talked about him as well. But for me, the stat that truly stands out in this one is just how one-sided the third period was. So 17-3 are the shots on goal in the third period in favor of Colorado. That definitely a stat that stands out. All right, let's hear from some of the people. We've had our thoughts here, and a lot of people echoing a number of the talking points that we hit on. Alex says they took their foot off the gas, need to play a full 60 and a perfect game to beat the Avs. They didn't beat Colorado this season, so just file that away. They do get a single point here, but Colorado wins all three of the matchups, and they played Colorado hard. Like, even in the games that they lost in Denver, and I think back to, you know, part of that four-game losing streak where they lost to Winnipeg and then went out on that three-game road trip, the mentors trip, they played with Colorado, held MacKinnon at bay until he got an assist on an empty netter. Yes, they've played Colorado hard, but they haven't found a way to beat them yet this season, and they're done with them for the regular season, but we'll see if they are on some sort of collision course in the postseason. Brent says soft call on the 5-on-3, but the illegal check to the head is only 2 minutes. And we did talk about that again, there's just such an inconsistency. If you're a player at that level, it must just drive you absolutely bonkers. And so Brent isn't off base there. Paul says game presentation, playing Blink 182 when it was 3-0 in the second period, thumbing their nose at the hockey gods. Not a winning strategy. Do you think the Music Man is to blame for this Canucks loss?
Yikes, yeah. I don't know about playing. Look, I actually know Tom Fleming pretty well. I don't think he would have done that intentionally. He probably just had some Blink 182 and didn't realize. But yeah, you don't want to, you wouldn't want to be doing that even if you're up 3-0.
Frankie says the goal at the end of the second changed the game. That, you know, of all the turning points for me, and we don't know, but if you get out of the second period up 3-0, I do think the Avs playing back-to-back may have just thought, hey, it's not our night. Not that they were going to roll over entirely, but I think that gave them life at 3-1. You're saying, hey, we're, you know, one shot away from making it a one-goal game, and ultimately that's what happened. They get the power play goal early, and then there was the balance of the period to get the one that they needed, and they did that and looked for a long stretch there. I thought maybe they were going to win it outright. Didn't happen, but they do get the winner in OT. Ernie says turnovers. Officiating wasn't great, but you can't blame the refs for the loss. No resolve this evening. And I think that's fair to question the resolve of the Vancouver Canucks. I think people will look and, you know, I mean, the core group doesn't have a ton of playoff experience. You know, the guys that we consider the core played playoff hockey in a bubble, which was the most unique environment that they're ever going to see. And so once they get to the postseason this year, like, they're going to have to go on the road. They're going to face some, you know, raucous buildings and hostile environments. And, you know, there are going to be some learning lessons ahead, but this was at home. This was your crowd. You had everything going your way. Didn't do enough with it to ultimately to get the 2 points. Justin says, Canucks didn't get the puck out at crucial times when they had clearing opportunities, lost their composure when the Avs pushed hard. Hasn't happened against recent tough competition, but the Avs do seem to have that different gear. And you touched on that in the first segment as well, that, you know, there were some moments where the Canucks had the puck on their stick and it just felt like opportunities to get it out of the zone. And they've been good at that on the win streak. You know, they've played really clean hockey, but for whatever reason, you know, sometimes it is really those little things. I mean, we joke about little things and the simple things, but, you know, a clear at that level can make the difference. If you don't get the puck out, you're turning it over and allowing team to continue pressure. And ultimately that's what Colorado did for much of that third period.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Canucks' lack of playoff experience. They're almost going to have to learn on the fly from these types of games. And I also think back to one of the earlier home games against Winnipeg, where the Canucks were hanging with them for most of the contest, especially at even strength. But of course, special teams got in the way. But one of the main lessons there was it was a really physical, really chippy game, and they lost their cool a little bit chasing hits. And I think that's a learning lesson that you're able to really drill home, because through February, through March, through April, these are going to feel like playoff games, especially now that the closer you get to the postseason, teams are sharpening. They're really revving and gearing up for the playoffs. And especially for a team like the Avs, don't forget that there are a ton of stakes on the line where they need to finish first in the Central Division as far as they're concerned, because they want to avoid playing a team like Dallas or Winnipeg in the first round. That's part of the reason why these games feel like playoff contests, is because a team like Colorado realizes the importance of winning these games down the stretch. They're offering their best hockey, and the Canucks have to sort of learn on the fly. And it may not be the worst thing in the world for the Canucks to go through an experience like this and hopefully learn something from it so that you don't repeat it in the postseason.
Thanks to everybody for the feedback. Always appreciate the comments, and we're seeing more and more as the Canucks work their way closer to the playoffs that we're talking about here. 15 games to go now. This was game 67 for the Vancouver Canucks. So 67 down, 15 remaining. The next one, Saturday against Washington. Now, the first two teams that have come through on the homestand playing back-to-backs, Capitals won't be back-to-back, but it will be 3-4 for them. They got thumped in Edmonton tonight, 7-2. They have to go to Seattle for a game on Thursday and then come here for the game back half of Hockey Night in Canada. This is a Washington team that is still within striking distance of the Islanders, who occupy the second wild card in the East. The Detroit Red Wings are in free fall. They've lost six in a row. They're tied with the Islanders at 72 points, and then you've got Washington at 69. So they're not out of it, and you would think that you'll see a desperate team. I'd be curious to see how they respond to a 7-2 loss as they go into Seattle tomorrow night. But, I mean, the Canucks beat the Caps 3-2 in overtime. JT Miller on the turnover goal back in February. And that was the back half of back-to-backs for the Canucks. They had played in Detroit the day before. But this is a Capitals team. I'll be surprised if they can make up the ground necessary to climb above the playoff bar in the East. Ovechkin, we know his struggles all season long. He had 7 shots. Of the 25 shots they had in Edmonton, he had 7 of them in an 11 attempt. So old man Ovi shooting the puck a lot, but not much to show for it there. What do you make of the next opponent coming in here for the Canucks?
Yeah, Caps have had a tough time scoring all year. They have had a struggling power play. For them, manufacturing offense has been the biggest challenge all year, and especially now that the Canucks have the rest advantage, and considering at 5-on-5 for the last week and a half, they've really been dialed in the neutral zone and not giving up a lot of high danger chances. You're hoping that it's a get right type of game, a reset. And this stretch as a whole, I mean, you've got Washington, then you've got Buffalo, and I know Buffalo has been picking up some steam lately. They're hoping to mount a Cinderella type miracle run back into the playoffs, but still, it's the Buffalo Sabres. It's not the strongest opponent. Then you got Montreal. Then you got a Calgary team that's dejected, has lost some pieces recently, of course, because of the trade deadline. This is the stretch now to pick up some wins, continue to rack up some points over the next few games, help Casey DeSmith pick up some confidence as well, hopefully.
Well, we'll see what happens. Again, a bit of a break on the scheduling front in that the Canucks don't play till Saturday. And we said the Caps go to Seattle for a game Thursday before arriving here for their one and only visit of the season. 4-3, a disappointing result for the Vancouver Canucks. They had the 3-0 lead. It gets away from them. The Avs win it in overtime. Valanciunas' goal, 28 seconds in on the power play, the difference maker. 4-3, Colorado defeats the Vancouver Canucks. Harm, as always, appreciated. Always great insight. Good getting you on Rinkwide. We look forward to the next time that we have the opportunity to do this. For Harmon Dial, this is Jeff Patterson. Thanks so much for listening to another edition of Rinkwide Vancouver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.